Welcome to After the End from the Ethos Centre at the University of Oxford, funded by the Wellcome Discovery Awards Scheme. I'm Patricia Kingori, Professor of Global Health Ethics at the University of Oxford. In this series, we explore endings and their aftermaths. Who decides when an end has been reached? Whether the end for one person is the end for everybody? And what happens after these so-called endings? In this podcast, we hear from Daniel Carroll, Western University, Canada, on Indigenous peoples' time and climate change.
I am originally from the southwestern United States. I come from two tribes there, the Diné, also known as Navajo, and the Waimon Apache tribe. I completed the PhD in Indigenous Health Program, which is one of the first of its kind in the world at the University of North Dakota. Shortly thereafter, I came up here to Ontario, Canada, and I'm working at the Western University as a postdoc with the School of Medicine and Public Health. I was raised and grew up on the Fort Apache Indian Reservation in the southwestern U.S., and I've lived there most of my life. I did go to school there up until the first year in high school, and then I went to an off-reservation school. So my view of time has been influenced by, I guess, what you would call two different worldviews. When you're young and you're just living in it, you don't really pay attention or notice these differences, I think, until later in life. Now, looking back, I do see the differences, especially when it comes to how we think about time. Time seems to slow down when I go back home to my communities. I also worked there for many years before living in the more modern Western world, and I also observed that difference. That's important to think about, especially in the work that I do around public health, Indigenous health, because when Western institutions or research projects want to work with maybe different tribes, they have to acknowledge that the pace is different there too. We know that in Western society that we're always about deadlines and we have to stay on track. We have to be on time, which I mean, is good in some ways, but it's so fast sometimes. And working back home, even if you're from that community, it takes time to really get to know the community, build trust, and you have to be on their agenda sometimes, which means their time also. And that's also recognizing that there are certain times of the year that things are happening. You don't want to be trying to push your deadlines and your work during that time, because that time is reserved for these other different things that have always happened for thousands of years. Certain ceremonies happen at certain times of the year. Different ones happen during the summer, but there's also some that happen in the winter. Summertime, in my home community, we have our coming of age ceremonies for our young women. That's usually throughout the summer. And there's different teachings around that. But I also think about our connection with the land, because there's certain foods that are available at certain times of the year. And our people know when those certain foods are coming up. But that is also changing, and that's being affected by climate change. We're observing differences in those times of the year when certain foods would be coming up, berries, nuts. We plant corn and different crops, and I think that time has changed. We have to adjust it so that it will be successful because of different factors, not only the climate, but you know, rainfall and freeze. That's another thing to think about, is the last freeze of the winter. That's when we would know it's okay to put your seeds down. But even that's been unusual, because I worked with one of our tribal farms back home, and we really had to pay attention to when that freeze was going to happen, because sometimes it would just surprise us. We didn't expect a late freeze, like in May, or even I think it happened one time in June. So that really impacted the planting. So maybe we go back to that ancestral mindset of time, where we're not looking at the clock, but we're paying attention to the sun, position of the sun. Indigenous peoples, I think in general, one of the underlying similarities that I think a lot of our communities share is that our view of time is more cyclical rather than linear, which is more of the Western type of thinking about time. And from my own tribes, what I've learned is that the time we're existing in now, it's a part of a bigger space, because we not only think about the present, but we always acknowledge the past, especially past generations. It's very common to hear our people, especially our elders, talk about our ancestors and their time and what they went through during that time and up to now, how that's influenced us. And then a lot of the work I do, like public health work, we always think about the future too. That's one of our greatest strengths, our forward thinking, especially thinking about future generations and what are we doing now that will impact future generations. Both my tribes and probably other tribes also in the US and even up here in Canada, there's a lot of issues that we are concerned about, especially when you think about the future and future generations. One of the major ones is preserving and protecting our culture, our languages, our ways of knowing, our knowledge systems. That's always been a priority, but I think even more so now because of the time we're living in. There's a transition, and I hear others speak about that, that we're starting to see in the generations now. My tribe's the majority is actually pretty young, probably under 40 years old now. And there's a lot of implications with that, especially with preserving language and culture. Because I know we're having less people, especially our younger people, that are speaking that language now just because of the influence of Western society. I've noticed we've been losing a lot of our elders, especially back home. And a lot of those elders were fluent speakers in the language. They had a wealth of knowledge and lived experiences when it comes to our own Indigenous knowledge. And a lot of that knowledge is contained in the languages. There are community-based efforts being made to protect that, preserve it. And a big part of that is that intergenerational transmission of knowledge. One of the more successful programs they've done, like language immersion schools, with not only my tribes, but I think a lot of other tribes in the U.S., having young children be immersed in their languages, especially in early childhood care spaces. I know the Navajo tribe, they have a language immersion school, and they've seen a lot of promising results from that school. Not just the children actually learning to speak their language, of course, that's the main purpose, but in general, their academic performance has been a lot better compared to similar Western-based schools. It's interesting when you look at that area of Indigenous knowledge transmission. I've actually been doing a lot of research lately around that space. And I know that majority of our Indigenous knowledge has been transmitted orally, storytelling from generation to generation. That's the way it was always done historically. There's even cultural teachings and protocols around the importance of that. Certain knowledge is only passed on orally, even during a certain time of the year or the seasons. But I think tribes or Indigenous communities, they really have to think differently about that, especially if not enough people are actually speaking their local language. If they're going to protect those knowledge areas, then maybe what was always done orally has to be written down now. We have to record it and store it and make sure that it's not lost, because some of that knowledge, we won't be able to get it back unless I think we record it and protect it in that way. I think both my tribes, I've not heard a lot of dialogue about endings, but I've heard people talk about, like, before reservation time. The reservations were established in the later 1800s. There's nobody that's still around from that time. But of course, through stories shared throughout generations, there is some discussion around that. What was life like before reservations were around? I think that in itself, that does represent some type of ending, a very traumatic ending, where our tribes were subjected to a lot, and some tribes were not fortunate to be put in those original areas that their people come from. Some of the major pandemics, like the Spanish flu, hit our communities very hard. And I know that when COVID came around, obviously people were very concerned because based on previous experiences and stories that were told about how these sicknesses ravaged through a lot of our communities with COVID, I know both of my tribes were affected greatly by it, like a lot of other Indigenous peoples around the world. I do think it's important to highlight the way that our communities came together during the pandemic, especially the peak when it was first starting. There was a lot of messaging around protecting our communities, especially protecting our elders, because of course there are knowledge keepers, and there was a lot of really good efforts that were successful. And then I think just this concept of not only thinking about yourself, but others around you, of your whole community as a collective. And I think that also came into play when the vaccines were starting to be distributed. Of course, there was mixed feelings about vaccines, but there was messaging around protecting others around you and why that was important. I don't think COVID has ended, obviously. It's still around, but not at the scale it was a couple of years ago. Recently, there was an event centered around like community healing, because of course there was a lot of trauma and families lost loved ones and different people in the community. And a lot of families were not able to have that time to grieve when the peak of it happened. And of course, we weren't able to gather, physically gather, and we're very social in that way and supportive. So it has had long-lasting impacts up to today. We lost a couple people in our own family. Yeah, we were losing more people than usual, especially in these smaller communities. So I think there was a lot of lessons learned from the most recent pandemic, both positive and areas that could be improved for the future. But I think overall, our tribes just worked with what resources they had, and then they figured out different strategies on how they could cope with the pandemic and ensure that their communities were as safe as they could be. Tribal nations have endured past pandemics, and we were going to get through this one because that's what we do. We persevere. And part of the way that we've done that, including from the past, is our knowledge and what was taught around that. Our different tribes, they had different circumstances back then. Modern medicine was still very foreign, but I think our own systems of healing and traditional medicine, I think those were very strong when these pandemics in the past happened. I think those events in themselves, whether they were pandemics, natural disasters, removal from our territories, we continue to see the impacts of those events up to today, even though they might have been hundreds of years ago. In my field of work, it's necessary to acknowledge that events themselves may have been over in Western society, but we continue to see the aftermath and impacts of those events on our own knowledge systems, our lifestyles, our existence as people. But we also see this notion of we continue to be here, we will always exist. Our ancestors and those different beings, they put us here, you know, in our different land areas to protect those areas and steward them for future generations. When it comes to describing, I guess, what you would call long time ago, or maybe even the beginning of time, you don't hear much about specific years or times, but a long time ago, this is what happened. This is what I learned. This is what we used to do. That type of dialogue. What I think about when I hear that is long time ago, way before the U.S. was established, before our different states were around, before all these laws were put into place. So way back in time when we were created as a people. There's a lot to be learned from Indigenous communities, not only their resilience, but also how they move forward with the knowledge of those different times. I always think about what my ancestors went through. How did they deal with that? but they also had the foresight to see why it was important to ensure that not only would they continue to exist, but also protect our culture, our languages, our lands. And they knew that what they were doing at that time would impact us today, a responsibility that they took very seriously. And that teaching is also, I think, carried on today. You know, what are we going to leave for future generations? What are we doing today that will impact those generations in the future? That's a big motivation for me personally, especially in a lot of the work that I do and have done in the past. It's not just a career or professional work for me. It's very personal too, especially when you talk about preserving our Indigenous knowledge systems, including those around time and space and health and healing. It's crucial that we make sure that those knowledge systems are still around for future generations. There's also a lot of healing that is needed, especially when you talk about endings, whether it's pandemics or disasters. With our communities, we're still going through that healing from the past. Those events happened hundreds of years ago, but we're still dealing with that. I read somewhere that healing isn't linear also. I think that's true with our communities too, that it's also cyclical. We're always talking about cycles and, you know, why it's important to break cycles. I've been taught that we're only here for a short amount of time. And what are we going to do with that time that we're here?
That brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you for listening. Do join us for our next episode, where we hear more about Indigenous perspectives on time from Sylvia Kakunda, co-founder of the Action for Bachelor Empowerment Group in Uganda. I'm Patricia Kingori, and you've been listening to After the End, brought to you by the Ethos Centre at the University of Oxford, funded by the Wellcome Discovery Awards Scheme. Please share this episode on and subscribe to the series wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more information about the After the End project on our website at www.afterTheEnd.squarespace.com.